My name is Whitney. I'm an alcoholic. And I got sober on October 19th, 2003. And by the time I was ready to go into treatment, I was driving home from work and going straight up into my bedroom and getting the bottle of vodka I had hidden under my bed. And drinking it until I got super drunk, and I lived with my parents at the time, and I would just drink until I was super, super drunk, and then I would go into my parents' bedroom and watch TV or just pass out or anything like that, and then it escalated until I was, I couldn't wait until I got home to drink. I had to stop at the liquor store and get those little mini bottles of vodka. And I would drink those on the way home, and I'd get, first I got three, and then I started to get four, and then I got five, and then I get six, and by the time I got home, I was drunk, and then I'd continue to drink all night long. And my parents started breathalyzing me, and they had, like, this electronic breathalyzer, and it was pretty tense at my house, and at their house, and it was just crazy, you know. It was really crazy. I was just everything was, you know, a fight, and everything was so upsetting for everybody. And you know, I'm the type of person that, you know, I want everybody to like me a lot. And when, you know, people are upset with me, or people, you know, don't like what I'm doing, it makes me really, you know, I just can't handle it. And so that was what was happening for the, at that time, for sure. You know, everybody was upset with me. Everybody was not liking what I was doing. Everybody was in my face about it. My parents were breathalyzing me every day. And, you know, my sister was always talking to me about what was going on. And so it was really, you know, I started to think, wow, you know, what's going on with me? And I didn't realize at the time that I was an alcoholic. I didn't know that I had an alcohol problem. And I just wanted to do what I wanted to do. I just wanted to drink. I just wanted everybody to leave me alone. I just wanted to drink. And I wanted everybody to be happy with me at the same time. And that wasn't going to happen. You know, I couldn't find that balance. And so, I would try to stop drinking. I eventually tried to stop drinking, and I tried to stop, but I couldn't. And so, you know, I tried to do a whole bunch of stuff. You know, my parents wanted me to go to this addiction psychologist, and I went there, and, you know, he was a recovering alcoholic, and so everything I said to him was like, you know, he saw right through me. He saw, you know, I was lying to him about everything that I was doing. And so he could just see everything, you know, he could totally see right through my lies. And so that was, it was really difficult to talk to him because, you know, he knew right away that I was an alcoholic. And so he would, he said, you know, you need to go to an AA meeting. And I was like, you mean Alcoholics Anonymous? And he was like, you know, he said, yeah, you need to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And my parents were there. We all went to this meeting together with this guy. And he said, you know, you should go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And my parents were like, oh, yeah, you know, whatever she needs to do. This, you know, this guy was like a guru or something to them. And so they were like, okay, you should go. That's what you need to do. And I was just trying to, at that point, please them so that I could drink. And please them so that I could just do whatever I wanted, but still make them happy. And just kind of find that balance so that I could make them happy, but still do what I wanted to do. And so I said, okay, sure. You know, I'll go to an AA meeting. And so the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that I went into, I walked into this room and there were, like, you know, a whole bunch of old guys. You know, it was like, I mean, really, it was like a whole bunch of guys that I couldn't relate to it all. I mean, I walked into this room and it was like, you know, there were no women my age at all. It was the wrong meeting. It was definitely the wrong meeting to walk into. And so I walked out of there and I was like, you know, I'm not an alcoholic. And so I definitely, I didn't realize at the time that, you know, you have to go to a lot of different meetings to find the right ones. And so I went through all these different things trying to stop drinking. And nothing worked, you know, nothing worked. And, you know, I went through a whole bunch of stuff with my parents. It was really terrible at home. And, they didn't want me to drive my car, so I wasn't driving my car. And, you know, it was just this kind of just really stressful, tense time with them. And I was trying to do things so that I would make them happy, but at the same time still be able to, you know, try and stop drinking, but not still be able to drink, and just all this, you know, crazy stuff that we do. And so finally I had put together a couple of days of not drinking. And so I went up to my parents and I said, okay, you know, this is it. I'm sober, you know. And they were like so excited. And I said, okay, so I'm going to go to my friend's house and I'm going to spend the night and I'm going to take my car. And so they said, okay. And so I got in my car and I drove straight to the liquor store and I got that big bottle of vodka. And I hid it in my backpack, and I was, you know, drinking it the whole night. And the weird thing was that, you know, my friend was drinking that night. But I wasn't drinking with her. I was hiding it. And I was going into the other room and drinking from, you know, the big bottle of vodka in my backpack and not drinking like she was. You know, she was just having, like, a couple of beers or something like a normal person. So I got, you know, super drunk, and I remember coming out of the bathroom, and she said, you know, I'm so worried about you. I don't know what's going on with you, but, you know, I called your mom. And so my parents came and picked me up, and they did the breathalyzer test, and the whole thing happened all over again. And the next day, I went into Pacific Health. The next day I actually took a tour of Pacific Hills, and we fought over whether or not I was going to go, and you know, it was a big fight, and it was, you know, whether or not I was going to go, and it was, you know, that whole thing. But God got me there, you know, God put me there, and he, you know, saw to it that I was there. And I remember going home and packing, and I put, like, my Xanax in, like, a sock, and I put, like, my, you know, pot or whatever in, like, a cigarette pack and, you know, all the things that we do. And when I checked in, they found, like, everything, and they unpacked all the stuff. And, you know, I mean, it was like I signed up, but I wasn't really signed up. You know, I wasn't really signed up in my head. And so I was in Pacific Hills, and I was in treatment, and I, you know, I did the deal, you know, and it was a 42-day program, and we had to do the first three steps, and it was really, you know, I mean, it was treatment, and my parents had to come for family day, and that was super tough, you know. My dad was crying, and my mom was really, really mad at me, and we did by the time we got to the third step, I remember, you know, just working through a lot of stuff there. I remember working through a lot of stuff, and I remember just feeling like, you know, I just had to just surrender it all. I just had to just give it all up, you know. I remember feeling just like I had just given it all up and given it to God and surrendered it all. And that was my sobriety date. when I did my third step there. And when I got out of treatment, I went back and I lived with my parents, and it was really tough. You know, my parents were, they wanted to, like, you know all about my program, and, like, they wanted to, you know, like, know what I was doing. They wanted to know what meetings I was going to, and they wanted to, like, you know, it was like so overwhelming, because it was like they had been so worried, and so, you know, they had seen all of this stuff that I had done, and I had done so much damage to our relationship, and they didn't trust me anymore. And it took a really long time for me to rebuild that trust. But what was so cool was that, you know, this program, the program of AA, taught me how to rebuild those relationships, and how to do it not by, you know, going and reporting what I was doing and saying, oh, okay, this is what I'm doing, this is what I'm doing, but it was just by doing it. You know, it was just by, you know, walking the walk, and, you know, going to the meetings, and, you know, working with a sponsor, and just by changing, you know, just by the change that was happening in me. And that was how I rebuilt that relationship with them. And that was really cool, because, you know, my, my dad had cancer. Like, he had skin cancer that went into his ear, and he had to, like, get his ear removed, and he just had so many challenges in the past couple of years. And, you know, they called me, and they called me and Jim. Thanks. You know, they call us, and, you know, it's like we're the ones that they call. And we're the alcoholics, you know. And it's like, they trust us, you know, they trust me now. And it's so cool, because, you know, I never thought that I was going to be able to repair that at all. And it just happened. And it happened because of the tools of this program. And, you know, what's so cool about this program is that it taught me how to bring God into all the decisions I make, and that He's the center of everything. And it just, it taught me how to trust and rely on Him, and that, you know, to bring Him into everything. So I never thought that I would be grateful that I was an alcoholic. But when I became grateful that I was an alcoholic, it was just this really amazing thing. You know, it was just because the program and being an alcoholic or recovering alcoholic has helped me in every part of my life. And I met Jim on Christmas Day at the Friendship Center. And I remember looking into his eyes for the first time and knowing that he was going to be my husband, and having every assurance in my heart that I was going to marry him, and just having this peace come over me. And I've always had that peace since I met him. And what's so cool about Jim is that he's such a strong spiritual leader, and that was such a neat part of our relationship, especially when I met him, because I was just learning kind of all of those things, and, you know, just kind of opening my eyes to that part of recovery. And so that really was, Jim really brought that whole part of recovery to a new level for me. And the other part of recovery that is so important to me is to have fun. And that's another part that Jim is really good at, because, you know, the thing that I love about Jim and our relationship is that, you know, he plans to have so much fun all the time. You know, it's like he makes sure that we take a vacation every year, and that, you know, that that's really important to us. And to make sure that we have lots of fun all the time, you know, going to the beach and going camping and stuff like that. And, you know, I never thought that sobriety was going to be fun when I got sober. And I never really realized what fun was until I got sober. And I have so many blessings in my life. I am just so grateful for this program, for recovery, for the community that I'm in, for my marriage and for Jim, and for just all of the things that God does in my life. And I feel so blessed every single day. And especially for that, you know, when I have something going on, I have this peace that even though I might be really unhappy or really, you know, kind of just freaked out that something is, that I have a problem or that something's going on, I have this peace that I'm going to be able to walk through it and come out on the other side, because I have the tools. You know, I have the knowledge that I know that. I know that I'm going to be able to get through it. And that's what this program has done for me. I'm so grateful for it. Thanks for letting me share.
My name's Jim. I'm an alcoholic, among other things. But it's great to be here. That was the most precious Christmas gift I could ever get. You know, that was truly, I mean, never would have figured that. You know, we did meet, you know, Christmas Day at the club, the old San Clemente Club, which was just like a stone throw away from here. Wasn't expecting to meet it. That, but you know, God has a lot of great surprises in store for us. You know, we just got to hang in there and stay sober, and that kind of stuff happens. I just feel, you know, blessed on a daily basis. We have this really nice spiritual bond that is the strength of our relationship. And you know, Jeff and Lisa were at our wedding. It was so cool. I was just kind of taking myself back to that. And my older brother, was my best man. But he just kind of wasn't around for the times when I needed to pray, you know? And it's like Jeff was there, you know, and Barry was there. And Dave Hickman, who I think speaks here too, was there. He was the pastor that married us. It was so cool to have him there, you know. Just felt so much calm. I could really enjoy that whole experience so much better when I had this group of guys to pray with. And take a drink here, quick. Just got centered in the Lord through that whole experience. And, you know, every day is like a new experience, a new gift. And you have the chance to make the best of that. My story, you know, there's a lot of alcoholism in my family. It goes way back. You know, I just remember my grandmother talking about, you know, her great-grandfather being an alcoholic. You know, it just goes way, way, way back on both sides of my family. And so I'm actually the first one that I know, you know, that got recovery. So I think that's really cool. And maybe stopped it, you know, from continuing. So just a total gift of God. I didn't get to go to recovery home. I was doing a lot of cocaine back in the 80s. And that kind of led me into just really crazy behavior. I was adrenaline junkie too. And I started robbing banks and liquor stores and whatever, you know, mostly banks. In fact, one of the banks I robbed was right over there by the old club. If you remember, there was this Shakey's Pizza there. And there's a, I think it's a furniture place now, you know. It used to be a little drive-through there. And I was just, you know, whacked on coke for a long time. And all these ideas just came to me, spur of the moment, you know. I should rob banks, you know. Just one day, I should do that. You know, and just so compulsive my behavior all the time, just like that. Yeah, I should do that, you know. Didn't think of any consequences, like I'm not going to get busted. I kind of felt like I had this charmed life, too, because I got away with so many things. This is just going to keep happening, you know, and I'm just going to get away with this and get away with the other one. And that's addictive, too. You know, the whole adrenaline feeling from doing these kind of things was just like a high in itself. And there was no recovery homes back then, really, so to speak of, you know, that I knew about. And I knew nothing about recovery. I had no idea that you could actually recover from this, you know, or that I needed to recover, really. But, you know, but had no concept of that. And God was like a distant, like, I believe there is a God, but there's no way. And I didn't want to, you know, believe that God had anything to do with my life, that he, you know, would be, you know, personally involved in helping me to recover at all. So it just never came to my mind. No recovery in anybody I knew, and nobody in the family. You know, we just drank. You know, we just did drugs, and that's what we did. And so, you know, my first recovery home was the Department of Corrections. You know, I did 5 years when I finally got busted. So I did quite a bit of time, and they shipped me all over the state. I was in these fire camps, you know, and I was going from place to place. And I remember AA would come up there and do this H&I thing. And they'd bring like a speaker up there, and I'd listen to him talking. Usually it was Alcoholics Anonymous, and I could not relate to Alcoholics Anonymous because I wasn't a drunk, you know. I was a cokehead, I was, you know, pothead, all this other stuff. And I never really thought of myself as having an alcohol problem. And this is kind of weird, you know, just all the denial that was running in there. Of course, you know, when I was in prison, I was even trying to get high all the time. I was like, you know, we'd make this Pruno, we called it, you know, and if I could get some of that, I would. But, you know, for the most part, I guess I was kind of sober most of the time. And when I got out, the first thing I could think about was getting drunk. You know, that was having some beers. I didn't really think about I was going to get drunk, but, you know, that did happen. I mean, my system was so clean that I remember it was like 3 beers, and I was like, I was almost out of it. And then, of course, I finished the 6-pack, you know. And by that time, I was really drunk, and I hadn't seen my mom in so long. I was supposed to go over there and meet with her, and I just remember just the incredible demoralization started to begin, you know, more of that, you know, with alcohol. And alcohol just became my new drug. I felt like, wow, you know, this is really easy to get, and this really kills everything I'm kind of feeling at the time. It doesn't even matter what I was feeling at the time. It, you know, it could be happiness. I'm trying to kill that too, you know. I'm trying to kill everything with alcohol. But it wasn't happiness very much. I mean, it was really pretty much mostly a lot of anxiety and feelings, you know, low self-worth, just that, you know, self-pity, actually, is my biggest character defect, you know, that along with pride. So they go all hand in hand. It seems like pride carries me up to this level, and then I just shoot straight down or spiral down with self-pity, and my head just keeps going back and forth with this kind of thing until I drink or I use some other kind of destructive behavior. And then it was alcohol, and I was really getting into a lot of trouble. I never did go back to prison. I did get this one little violation I did, and I went to jail for stealing a pack of cigarettes. You know, I did like 15 days for that, you know, in the county jail, and that was because I was too drunk to run away, you know, and the box boy tackled me because I was wearing flip-flops. I was trying to run away in these flip-flops, and this guy, man, he was just gung-ho, man. He wanted to get me, you know. He's not going to steal cigarettes there anymore. I don't know if you guys remember the old Albertsons in town. You know, it was like the only store around. And I was always going in there just, oh, yeah, I need cigarettes. Didn't even think about it, you know. just who I was, and you know, lying, stealing, cheating, just regular routine, you know. It's all part of the deal, it seems like. And I just didn't even seem to know any other way, you know. It just seemed like that was. And so the turnaround here, let's get to that. I remember I did you know, kind of hold a job down. I remember I used to pat myself on the back about that too. And I pat myself on the back that I wasn't doing hard drugs, I was just drinking, you know. I do that. I say, look, you know, I think I'm holding down a job. I was a cabinet maker for a long time, and actually right near where the club was, keep referring to this place, it was kind of in the, you know, pretty close to here, you know, I was telling you. It's in an industrial area, and there's a bar right there, there was, still is. And, you know, cabinet shops, auto shops, bar. And then the AA club, which was about two blocks away. And I used to drive by there every day, you know, look at these people out there, and they're drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes. And you think, wow, what is that, you know? And I still knew nobody in recovery, had no idea what that was about. I thought it was like an unemployment office, you know. And I see the same people there, you know, thinking, man, they still haven't got a job, you know. And they're all just drinking, you know, coffee and smoking cigarettes. And I used to smoke a lot. I think, yeah, I can just fit in with them. Perfect. Just looking at them, I go, man, I could go right over there and fit in. Yeah, of course I could, because I was an alcoholic and I didn't know it. I did have no clue. Isn't that weird, the denial, but just running in, just so deep. I mean, in so many different levels, and I had no clue that I could ever get recovery, or there was recovery, or, you know, just God's time, you know, I guess. I guess that's what it is. But I got kind of forced into it in one way that my boss, when he came to the shop one weekend, I had been party central there, you know, at his shop with beer cans everywhere. I must have gotten a fight because there was some blood over there, and there was probably me. I broke my ribs a couple times in fights I barely remember. And there was weed on the table saw with papers all over it. Don't remember any of that. And he was like telling me, well, you know what? There's a place down the street for you, and I hope you do well, you know, but you can't work here, you know. But he really did need me. I knew it because he didn't have anyone else. We had a lot of work. But, you know, I went over to AA just for him. And I was going to show him that, yeah, I can get this thing. And so I picked up a big book. I bought the books. And I remember looking at it, too. I remember looking at the steps and looking at that going, man, this is really a cool thing. This is really a great thing they have going on here. But I can't do that, you know. There's no way. I mean, I could barely read. I remember I could barely read. It was always hard for me to read. And I went to a couple of meetings, and they asked me to read something, too. I remember they asked me to read, like, chapter 5. And I had such a hard time with that. I remember, oh, I'm never coming here early. I'm going to come in late, you know. They're going to ask me to read again, you know. They're going to want me to do something here, you know. And so I thought it was kind of weird, too, at the end where everybody circles. I thought this was a cult, you know, and, you know, we're circling, we're praying, we're doing this stuff. And I had really no real desire, but the seed had been planted. There was some kind of hope, and that was cool to know. I would stop by every now and then after some incident, and I remember seeing Buzz there. It just took 30 years. And, man, he seemed like really present there a lot. And I'd see him, and I'd, every now and then I'd listen, you know. I'd hear something, just a little something out of my head, because my head is always, you know, arguing or about something and thinking about myself, what people think of me, you know, all that. And I hear him say something, and, you know, I am my worst enemy. I remember this thing he said, and, you know, you need to work the steps, get a sponsor, all the stuff you hear all the time, but you don't always hear. And then I found a sponsor, and that was great, man. I reached out my hand. That was the first big deal, man. That was it, really, in my case. Instead of just going to the meeting and then disappearing, you know. And that was my my lifeline there, man. I really feel like that, you know, in AA, just like getting into that lifeboat, you know, they talk about in the big book, you know. And I felt like that camaraderie with people too that were coming in and doing that. You guys are probably feeling that. It's just like this, you know, getting out of that ship that's just sinking. It's going down, and everyone else is going down, and you just like you feel so lucky that you're in this lifeboat, you know, and you got some really cool friends to do it with. And that's why I really still get, you know, I still get that feeling, and that is so incredible. And you know, it's my sobriety day is January 15th, 1995. So I have like 13 years, and 13 years going to AA has almost become automatic now. You know, I have no obsession to drink and use, but there's other destructive, you know, there's always kind of some destructive behavior around the corner that's going to start to happen, or there's going to be, you know, basically what's in between my two ears here, my head. My head is always out to get me still, even though I don't want to drink, you know. It's just amazing. And I get into despair still, you know, all of a sudden it just comes up, creeps up out of nowhere. And pride and self-pity, you know, the two knuckleheads, you know, are coming up and they're trying to take me down. And I always, you know, I do not have the ability to see that. You know, it's really God's grace that allows me the ability to see that. And I've really learned to do the opposite thing, you know. I mean, that's almost the case a lot of time. You know, it's like, I have an idea what I should do, you know, compulsive. You know, it's going in there, doing this thing, and it's like, maybe what would be the opposite thing to do, you know? Like, a lot of times I get these arguments in my head with someone that maybe has offended me or something. And I start to think about it, you know, it's going in my head, and then it's like I'm getting in this argument. Guys relate to this, you know, arguments, and I'm winning. Go figure, right? I'm winning, and I'm up here, you know, and now I'm winning this argument, and I've really, you know, I'm up here, and I'm pushing this person down here, you know, down, and then let's see, you know, I think it out, and I go, wow, what if I really did that, you know, how's that going to make me feel, you know? If I really did that, is that going to make me feel better? I mean, am I going to really put that person, you know? No, that's not going to help me. So what's the opposite thing I need to do? Oh, I need to build that person up. It's like the opposite. I wouldn't like, you know, or pray for them, you know? It's like I learned all this in this program, you know, and it really would not have come to me, you know. But sometimes that does help me, you know. Think about what the opposite thing I need to do, you know, at the time when I want to do it, you know. And I've just learned that, you know, the compulsive addiction, any of all that, you know, is really loud. It just, and it wants to do it, just, you know, and wants to muscle through it, and it's just like, yeah, we got to do it, you know. And then the God's voice, you know, and recovery is just so quiet, kind of peaceful. You'd almost miss it, you know? You'd totally miss it. I mean, I would, because I'm all caught up in the grind and the, you know, and addictive thoughts and compulsive, gotta do it now. But the peaceful voice just says, well, why don't you just maybe do this? Or, you know, maybe this would be a good idea, you know? And it's really quiet, and it doesn't, like, have to be done right then. Usually, you know, it's just like this thing, and it's almost like a suggestion, you know. We learned that maybe you should, you know, so that's kind of neat. I get that every now and then, and I sometimes brings me to tears, really, when I know there's a God that loves me. And you know, like it was yesterday, I remember, just, you know, it's one of those times despair just creeps up and comes out of nowhere, and I'm in it for a while, and then I know I can lean on God, and like the small voice just kind of came there, and if you're in tune to listen to it, and you're not in some addictive activity or thing, destructive behavior, then all of a sudden you'll hear it and it'll say, hey, why don't you just kick back under this tree for a minute, you know, and be with me. And, you know, that's what I can do. And I just got this overwhelming peace. I felt the wind, you know, the warm wind blowing on my skin and the sun filtering through this tree and just hitting, you know, part of my leg. And it felt really good to feel the sun and just to kind of be there and present in that moment and praying, you know, and just at peace. And the overwhelming feelings that it's going to be okay, you know. And that's just a really nice gift. I just wanted to share that. Me and my wife have been praying every morning, which has been really nice. We, you know, try to make that a ritual, and we have a lot of great books to read from, like meditations that are really cool. We have, like, I don't know, how many of those do we have? We used to have, like, a whole slew of them, so we can, like, pick and choose. Like, one day we'll read this one and read that one. And I tell you what, you know, just having her in my life and making, you know, making the connection, both of us together, you know, with God, just seems like that's the way it's supposed to be, you know. That's it, you know. And I just, you know, I'm so grateful for all you guys. I never know how to end this thing. Like, I could just keep going. I'm sorry. You know, I don't want to, though, because we got, you know, but just, you know, it works. Recovery is wonderful. I would not trade it, you know, at all for the best day, whatever I was doing, drinking and, you know, using at all. I mean, this is it. This is the place. Thanks for letting me share.